My name is Andy Dorado. This is Furthermore. We take the month's bestseller from the New York City bookstore where I work, we read the first 50 pages, and we decide, would we delve in or would we shelve it?
The orders are to stay at home. Stuck inside. It rained for 3 days straight. What's left to read? On today's episode of Furthermore, 50 Shades of Grey. That's right, we are going back in time to 2011, when Twilight was still all the rage. I'm joined by guest Andrea, you may remember her from Little Fires Everywhere, to discuss this wacky and wild book that was a literary giant at the time. It helped save a bookstore I worked at. No kidding. Andrea and I are going to discuss, even in these quarantine times, if we would delve in or we would shelve this. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Furthermore. I have a weird and wild one today, joined by a weird and wild one on the other end of the phone. Andrea, you're back! Hello, Andrea!
Hi!
Welcome, welcome. We're going to do 50 Shades of Grey today.
Oh my gosh.
And we're not going to do 50 Shades of Grey because it sold really well at the store or anything. We're doing it because, you know, we're in the midst of a pandemic and we need to read something weird.
This is what we need right now.
Yep, we need something.
This is what the world needs.
I need to bash on something. That's what I need to do.
Oh, shoot. Well, Andy, do you know, I went into this ready to bash it.
Yeah.
And I think I am gonna come up with the pro side.
Oh, no. Oh, no. All right. Let me see if I can convince you otherwise.
I'm going to bash it with you a little bit, but I'm going to play Pollyanna a little bit.
All right. All right. You know, I don't have any sort of burning questions for you to start with, other than have you read anything good since we've all been cooped up and stuck inside?
Well, I, shocker, have had a difficult time concentrating on anything.
Yeah.
So I finished reading all of Kitteridge.
Oh, nice.
And I loved it.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It was great. And I started reading Kurt Vonnegut.
Ooh.
Never read anything by Kurt Vonnegut before.
Really?
So I started reading Breakfast of Champions. A friend loaned it to me. And I am a Vonnegut fan.
I'd
like to read more of his stuff.
It's a good place to start. Forgive me for it. Do you know that I have this? Nobody on the podcast. Okay, wait. No, there we go. Nobody on the podcast.
Andy, you're taking your shirt off.
Yes, I'm trying to show Andrea my tattoo. Did you know I had a Kurt Vonnegut tattoo?
Wait, no, I didn't.
That's
know that.
Him.
Oh my gosh,
ouch.
I love that.
Ouch. Yeah, it's his little self-portrait that he would draw. That was the first tattoo I got. Was old Kurt.
That's a very good literary reference for your first tattoo, Andy.
And then the other one is I have "Don't Panic" on this shoulder in large friendly
which
letters.
Which is a great reminder for us all. That right now.
Didn't you know, everybody, all you needed was for me to take my shirt off to remind you, stay inside, don't panic. Well, I am.
It is the 50 Shades episode.
Yeah, it is.
You can't
see it, but I'm getting ready, everybody. I know I'm ecstatic that you were reading Kurt Vonnegut. Breakfast of Champions is obviously sort of it's like the big three for him, but he's one of those people that, you know, the big three for me, the ones that are most popular, the ones that people have probably read, are Breakfast Champions, Cat's Cradle, and Slaughterhouse-Five. But then for me, I have my like three other favorites that you know are sort of the dark horse things. So I'm curious to see what you'll think of the end of Breakfast of Champions and everything. There's a great speech by a character who's in another book of Vonnegut's that I really love. At the end of the book, who's an artist, his name is Rabbo Karabekian. So I'm interested to see what you'll think of that whole point and everything.
Oh, I am really looking forward to this.
That's a good one. Rabbo Karabekian is the protagonist of Bluebeard, which is another one of his. So, I'm so excited to read Kurt Vonnegut. Other than that, what has been your favorite quarantine activity?
Oh my gosh, besides staring out the window in panic?
Yeah.
That's a big favorite for mine. And you can do it. You can do that any time of day.
You can socially distance yourself by doing that, too.
Yeah, you can panic
any
time. No, I have been cooking and baking a lot.
Nice.
So have, like, I made homemade gnocchi last night.
Yum.
And I made a thing called pancake bread,
ooh,
which is delicious.
Is that just like pancake batter that you bake in a loaf tin?
It's a quick bread.
Yeah.
So it makes like poppy seed bread, but it tastes like pancakes. It's got maple syrup in it and like a nice like crumbly cinnamony topping.
Ooh, yum.
Yeah. So I'm eating well. eating well as I slowly descend into emotional panic.
I was a little concerned for you. You were someone I thought of and was like, I hope Andrea has a couple of vegetables in her house.
It doesn't seem like she should be alone. Yeah,
not just bags of Skittles. I hope that she's okay.
Oh my gosh. Well, somebody did give me, like, you're not the only one who has been concerned, and I have a jumbo size like canister of peanut M&M me.
Ooh.
And then another one of Cadbury mini eggs. Like,
oh yeah,
people were worried about my food supply drying up,
so they gave you mini eggs.
Yeah, like, they know my diet.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, I'm excited to get into 50 Shades of Grey, but I really want to know sort of what your impression of this book is. Like, where were you when 50 Shades of Grey happened? Because this was a phenomenon. Maybe it was 2011 that it was published. So we're coming on 10 years here ago where 50 Shades of Grey was like a thing.
Yeah, I remember when it came out. I did not read it when it came out. And I don't ever like to admit, well, and maybe we never want to paint ourselves in an unflattering light. Like, we all want to scoff, but we don't want to be seen as somebody who scoffs, maybe.
No.
I don't know. At least I don't like to see myself that way. I like to think of myself as, like, compassionate and, like, you do you and I'll do me and we'll be okay. But I am also the person who's like, oh, you're reading that book?
Yeah.
So I remember riding the subway and seeing people reading it and being really intrigued by the way that it really just sort of like catapulted like porn into the daily commute.
Yeah.
Not that it wasn't already there. I'm sure it was already there. But
in New York, yeah.
it's everywhere. But in just such a very, like, very public, very socially acceptable way.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me. So that was really the only exposure I had to it. I knew plenty of people who read it, knew plenty of people who read it and hated it.
Yeah.
And plenty of people who hated it without ever reading it.
Yeah. This came out right before I started working in bookstores in the city. And I remember my first job at the now gone, rest in peace, Shakespeare and Company that was down by NYU. I remember I got hired there in late 2012. And I remember my manager saying this book like saved our store when it came out because it had sold so many copies. That it was like, that was like right around the time it was really bad for independent bookstores. And they sort of had a little bounce back after that. And actually, I think in a weird way, part of the popularity of this book is tied to the same reason that independent bookstores took a hit, which was the popularity of e-readers really spiked. And so people could ride the subway and be reading this and nobody would be any wiser.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say you saw a lot of people reading it, you know, and I always scoffed at it. I was like, you know, whatever. I remember Risa reading it. I think she downloaded a PDF or something and she read it. I remember I came to New York once and to visit her and she was living with her mom at the time. So, you know, I think we went in to the city from, well, like, you know, from where we live now, funny enough. But, you know, we took the Metro North into the city and I remember we were coming back and I had a book with me and she was on her phone and she was like, I just got to a part that's like really uncomfortable. Can you read through it for me and tell me when it ends? And I was like, yeah. I was like, what is it? She was like, it's just like really, like, this is making me uncomfortable. And it was like something with nipple clamps or something. And she's like, it's just weirding me out. I can't. And I remember like reading through the paragraph and being like, it ends here. Also, what the hell is this?
So. No, I get that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And just as a side note, I remember getting a text from a guy that I was dating, and it was like a very mushy text, like, and I, like, I couldn't read it, like I had to look away. It was not ideal. Like, I remember reading it and being like, oh no, no, I can't. I need somebody else to tell me what this says. I can't look at it. So understand.
Yeah. It was just such a, I mean, it came on the coattails of Twilight, and it started out as Twilight fan fiction.
This is Twilight fan fiction.
Yeah, right? This is sort of, which, do you know what it was called when it was Twilight fan fiction?
Oh my gosh, I looked this up and I don't remember.
It was called...
My quarantine short term memory is shot.
It was called Snow Queen's Ice Dragon.
Snow Queen's Ice Dragon? I just want to say, like, I prefer that title. I prefer that because I think it sounds a little bit more like, I mean, I realize thematically, like, it doesn't work at all with what's happening in the book, but I think just in terms of the nutritive quality,
yeah,
or like the nutritive properties of the book, I think that is more in line.
That's so funny. I used to, I still have a blog up that I, you know, don't update at all. But for a while, I had given myself this challenge, actually back when I worked at Shakespeare, to read a different genre of book every month and then, you know, talk about it on the blog. And I used to do a little thing, a little tidbit, where I would compare the sales of the book I read to the total sales of 50 Shades of Grey. It's funny, when I started at the new store, the sales of that book were nowhere near the store that I'm at now, opened in 2009. And I think it wasn't like as... I don't think it sold as many copies up there, but so we had sold 236 copies of 50 Shades of Grey way back when. So the first book that I read, I wanted to read something that was published in the early 20th century. So I read Dubliners, which I was reading anyway. It was sort of a pretext to be like, okay, this book. But we'd sold 236 copies of 50 Shades of Grey, and all of the different versions of Dubliners we had sold amounted to 60. So it was sort of disheartening quite often to be like, oh my God, why have we sold so many copies? Which at the new store, I would play that game with slightly less disheartening, but it was just interesting to play that game with Elena Ferrante, because we sold so many of those of that quartet that it was like, how many of, you know, blank book have we sold as compared to My Brilliant Friend? Because that was just an interesting numbers game. So that was...
Yeah.
That was weird. It was self-published in 2011 with a press thing called the Writer's Coffee Shop, which is apparently like a, you know, self-publishing thing out of Australia. And it was like just such word of mouth that it took off.
Is she Australian?
No, she's British, actually.
Okay.
And I think somebody, they told Stephanie Meyer, who wrote Twilight, that it started out as fan fiction. And I was looking it up, and there's a quote from her that was like, "It's not my genre, not my thing, but good for her," was sort of her response to that. So it's very funny.
Very supportive, Stephanie.
Yeah. Apparently on Amazon UK, it has outsold every Harry Potter book individually. Altogether, the sales of Harry Potter, you know, it's like millions and millions more. But apparently just 50 Shades of Grey has done better on that website than every other Harry Potter book individually. Now, I don't know how old that stat is, but... I wonder if now it's the same, but it's just, it's crazy to me that something like this took off so much. And my feeling on this book was always, it's like when something, I mean, you know, the kind of reader I am, where I don't delve really heavy into like straight sci-fi stuff, but you know, the kind of books that I like to read, I always find in the like sci-fi fantasy shelves of bookstores. But it's like that. It's like when something big comes out and it's like a sci-fi thing and it's like nominated for a bunch of awards and everyone's like, oh my God, have you read this? And it's like, yeah, I've read something like that. Like, there's a whole genre out there that's like this. This isn't a new thing. It's not like people in books have never had sex before. There's a whole genre of people writing this, for good or bad. Like, when I buy remainders for the store, there's like Amish romance porn that you can buy. Like, there's so much of it out there that it's always, it was so funny to me that it was like people all of a sudden were like, wow, I didn't know you could put this in a book. Like, yeah, of course you can. Haven't you ever seen the Highland Romance with the Scottish guy in the kilt and no shirt? And it's like there's a whole genre that's out there. So,
Andy, can we just pause and talk a little bit about this
I can, yeah,
I want to know more.
I've never,
I mean, honestly, it sounds probably sexier than regular porn. There's like probably way more candles.
I've never bought any of the books for the store because I don't think that they would sell. So it's literally just like the cover, and it's always,
you just know that they're available.
Yeah, it's always, you know, like a guy, you know, doing some sort of work. He's got a hammer or something, and a woman in her full.
Gotta be handy.
Yeah, yep. I actually once, one of the publishers of romance things, I think it's HarperCollins, they will send us periodically a folder, and in it are just the covers of a bunch of romance novels that are coming out, which is always hilarious because there's always one in there. I'm joking about the Scotland thing, but there's always one in there. And I don't know if it's the same author and I'm just missing that, but it's like, seriously, there's always one of like a Scottish dude in a kilt and no shirt. And it's some sort of Highland romance novel. But they also...
Well, Highland romance novels are timeless.
You can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong.
Ah, he said. Dude in a kilt. We like when you touch me, gratius. Yeah, good. Thank you. Me too. I did once, there was an article, I think it was in Publishers Weekly, all about how much like touching up they do of these things. You know, there was like, they had taken this picture, because they're always real life, you know, like people, the real models in these. And they had like the picture that they took in the finished product. And the woman in the picture is wearing a completely different color dress. They photoshopped her dress to be a different color. Her hair was, she was like blonde and they made her red. And it was just so interesting how much like, they like, they're just like, okay, we're going to just take this picture and then we'll make it better. Like, so.
We'll make it exactly the way we want it to look, which is, I mean, that's porn, right? That's fantasy.
There you go.
Like.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm gonna mold this to my specifications.
So going into this book, what did you expect from it?
Well, honestly, I didn't. I expected some bad prose, and I got that.
Yes.
I got that bad prose.
Yep.
What I did not expect was to feel as permissive and welcoming of the bad prose.
Ooh.
As I did.
Interesting.
I thought that it was bad, and I also thought, I'll get into this later. Like, I don't want to jump too far ahead. I expected some bad prose, and I got it. Did not expect.
Well,
I'm gonna save it for later.
What we got, yeah. I also expected that. I mean, it really does, and we'll talk more about it, but it really does sort of read like a fan fiction. Like, it really does feel like you're reading like something somebody, you know, put on their blog or their website or something, and was just, you know. So it's funny. It's also funny though to think of these characters as Edward and Bella instead of Anastasia and Christian. Can't even say these people's names, but yeah, I mean, that's just
Anastasia and Christian.
I can't think of anything else that's been like, can you imagine if you read like Colson Whitehead's newest book and it was like, oh yeah, yo, this started out as Star Wars fan fiction and then I just changed Jar Jar Binks to like Jack, like, you know, that was that. Like, I can't, it's just too funny. I should have done that for every piece that I submitted in college. I should have just been like, this started off as like it's like Pokemon fan fiction, but instead of Pikachu, this is Robert. Oh, that way that explains it. That's good.
I mean, it would be fun to do like to 50 Shades, like to see how many things you could dirtify.
Yeah.
You know, like how many things could you make smutty? Like,
Andrea, have you ever been on the internet?
Like mix Pokemon, but
no, stop, no, stop, no, there, yeah. stop there. No, okay. Well, let's get into this.
Like, there. You drove the car. You parked it.
I'm sorry, Pokemon. I gotta get the image of Pikachu doing bad things out of my head.
All
right,
Pokemon's all grown up.
Yep, great. let's start this here. So, okay. So, you know, sorry, spoiler alert for everybody. I'm sorry. There's no sex in these first 50 pages. I mean, I guess I wasn't totally expecting that, but we didn't even get into the really juicy parts of it.
I can tell you when the sex starts, Andy, because I wanted to know. I got to the end of the 50 pages and I was like, well, where's the peen?
Should I like control F this document for member and see what happens if like, or the word quiver?
Like nothing really interesting happens until like 160.
No. Oh.
She makes you read for a while.
Boring. All right. Well.
Spicy.
All right. Well, let's get into this. So the first sentence of this book is, I scowl with frustration at myself in the mirror. Damn my hair, it just won't behave. And damn Catherine Kavanaugh for being ill and subjecting me to this ordeal.
What a terrible lie.
There was so much in here that I was like, if this was my student, I would have just been like, cut, 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 yeah. Cut. So we are introduced to our main character, Anastasia Steele, who should be studying for her final exams, but instead she is getting ready to go do an interview for her roommate who is not feeling well. And
supposedly brilliant, but also doesn't prep her best friend on the person she's interviewing.
Exactly.
But you know.
Apparently her
rose-colored glasses, yep. We all see our friends as being maybe better than they are.
She's like a little into her friend. She's like, I'll do anything for her.
I just feel like Catherine Kavanaugh isn't like everything that Anastasia Steele says she is.
No. She's agreed to do this interview. So they're in college. She's supposed to be studying for her final exams. And Kate is her roommate. She has come down with the flu. And she convinces Anastasia to drive 165 miles to downtown Seattle, where she's going to meet the CEO of this company, Gray Enterprises Holdings, Inc., which is the most made-up company name I have ever heard.
Sure is.
She's going to Business Money Bank Account Wiring Fraud, Inc. Like, it's very funny. So my biggest question in the beginning of this was, why can't Kate just do a phone interview with this guy? Like, I guess I just didn't. I was like, just call him. Like, especially given what happens where she goes and it's like, this guy has like 10 minutes for her and that's it. Like, seriously? If you're a benefactor to a university 165 miles away, wouldn't you be like, yo, I'll just call and we'll do a phone interview. Like, it's fine. I know it's 2011 and we're not FaceTiming and Skyping and all that yet, but like, come on, man.
I think that is a fair question, Andy. And I think it's even more fair when you consider, like, he's supposed to have, I think, how long did it say the interview took her to get? Like she's been trying all year to get this interview with him, and that's why it's so important. And he's got, like, no time at all.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, he's got all this time to, like, hunt down Anastasia Steele.
Yeah. Well, he's got a lot of time for Anastasia Steele. Maybe not for Catherine Kavanaugh, but there's just so many little notes of like, why did you write this? All of the writing in this just feels, it does feel kind of stunted. Kate is my roommate, and she has chosen today of all days to succumb to the flu. Therefore, she cannot attend the interview she'd arranged to do with some mega industrialist tycoon I've never heard of for the student newspaper. That's just like, therefore in narration is just... Therefore, it should not be in like, right, like, even in your, like, college essay, like, you can't be like, therefore, World War II was bad. Like, no, just never therefore.
Oh, my gosh. But that is a great sentence, Andy. And I challenge you to work that into a piece of writing. Because
I would
really love to read, therefore, World War II was bad.
I had a joke with my friends in high school that I would try to work in some version of, I always use the Cold War as an example, or the Civil War. You know, the Cold War is a better one, right? I try to work in conclusion, the Cold War was neither cold nor a war. And I kept trying to make it work with stuff. So I was like, you know, in conclusion, the Great Depression was neither great nor depressing. And I was like, no, wait, that one doesn't work. So.
Yeah, it doesn't.
That was what I was saying. The dialogue in this is very, you know, strange anyway. 9 months, Kate says, to get this interview. And she says it will take another 6 to reschedule and we'll both have graduated by then. Like, okay, cool. You know, she's the editor of the paper. this is where what I was talking about with Anastasia. Even ill, she looks gamine and gorgeous. Strawberry blonde hair in place and green eyes bright, although now red-rimmed and runny. And Anastasia is very, into how she looks, and she feels very much like she does not look. I get the sense she doesn't look the way she doesn't look on the outside the way she feels on the inside, or vice versa. Perhaps she actually looks better on the outside than she feels on the inside, but she feels like everybody else around her is just like perfect and gorgeous, and she is not. She was, she says earlier in the thing about sleeping on her hair wet, and she's trying to get it under control, and she doesn't feel like she's dressed nice and everything. So I gotta give it to her. She's a good friend for driving, 165
sure
miles to do
okay.
this.
So I want to talk about that line, like that even ill, she looks gamin and gorgeous.
Yep.
Because I had the same initial response that you did reading that line.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, she sure spends a lot of time, she badmouths herself constantly. Like,
yeah.
You can't turn the page without seeing some line about her complaining about her hair or face or like how like unattractive she is.
Yep.
And how attractive Catherine is. And then when Christian Grey shows up how attractive he is.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, so at first I typed in a little note, ugh, like, ugh, gross. But then I thought, like, maybe this is one of the things that we like about this book.
Mm.
Or, like, when I say we, I mean people, not you. Just because it's, like, it's kind of corny in the way that our fantasies always tend to the extreme.
Yeah.
So it's doing that. Like, I mean, like when we read something like this, or like when we're going to something like anybody who's reading this is reading it for pleasure. Like,
yeah.
Nobody's
oh, totally.
Reading it
right.
for any other reason.
Right, right.
And so everybody wants to imagine, they want to be able to imagine themselves as the victim and as the victor.
Mm-hmm.
And this gives us that opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, we know what it feels like to be around somebody else and to think like, oh my gosh, they're so much hotter than I am. And that's one of the things that line is doing. It's like letting us to like picture, like letting us like sit in the shoes of the nerd hot girl, like the unhot hot girl.
Yeah.
Like Anne Hathaway in Princess Diaries. Like, nice try. We know that you're Anne Hathaway.
Right.
We know that you're royalty.
Yeah.
But like, you've got frizzy hair and glasses, and so like, okay, we'll go along.
Yeah. Do you think that's something endearing about this character, or do you think like, oh god?
Oh no,
I hate it.
Like, I hate it so much.
Yeah.
Like, it really drives me nuts. And I think I could also talk for a really long time about how I think it's disturbing that like all of her self-talk is terrible. And,
yeah.
And all of her value. I mean, like, we're not reading this book. And like, it's not like literature exists to give us good role models for like self-expression and self-love.
Right. Right.
But it is like incredibly unhealthy. Like, she has not a good thing to say about herself.
Yeah.
And any good thing that she attributes to herself comes from somebody else, or like from her
right.
interactions with, like, her value comes from her friendship with Catherine, or
right.
from the fact that this guy Christian thinks that she's hot.
Right. Which you're right, though. That is a thing that keeps you reading, though, right? Because it's like, in a way, you want this person to find some value, or like, whenever somebody gives her some value in that way, it's like you as the reader also get that. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah, she's not so bad. Thanks, Catherine Cavanaugh. You know, like.
Yeah. But then to your point, I mean, just with, like, things that like don't need to be there. I mean, that line, even ill, she looks gamin and gorgeous, strawberry
yeah.
blonde hair in place, and green eyes bright, although now red-rimmed and runny. Like, that, like, to me, that was confusing. Like, I didn't know, like, what am I picturing?
Right.
Like, does she have bright green eyes, or are they red-rimmed and runny?
Red-rimmed
or are they,
and runny, yeah.
Right, like, I couldn't tell what I was supposed to picture.
Yeah. It's one of the, I feel like that was one of those, like, usually she looks like this, but now she looks like this, which is, again, one of those things that, like, I don't know how much Kate comes back into it, but I felt like she was describing a lot. I also like the way this chapter ends, where then Kate can talk anyone into anything. She'll make an exceptional journalist. She's articulate, strong, persuasive, argumentative, beautiful, and she's my dearest, dearest friend. Good. Great. For you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, wait, I think I have a note on that. Although I think the note might just be barf.
Barf.
oh my gosh, the other thing that I noticed was just how much time is spent describing physical surroundings needlessly.
Yeah.
Like, the number of, I started marking just how many times she uses the word sandstone. I don't care. I don't care that it's a sandstone floor. All of this sandstone, it doesn't matter.
The next section is like classic. If you want to know what to cut in your writing, this is like the classic. Like, the next scene is Anastasia driving to where she's going. And unless you're going to do something in this where you develop some character,
she's never show up there.
Just cut. Yeah. The roads are clear as I set off from Vancouver, Washington towards Interstate 5. It's early and I don't have to be in Seattle until 2 this afternoon. Fortunately, Kate has lent me her sporty Mercedes CLK. How does she have a Mercedes? I'm not sure Wanda, my old VW Beetle, would make the journey in time. Oh, the Merc is a fun drive, and the miles slip away as I hit the pedal to the metal. If the miles are slipping away for you, Anastasia, don't fucking tell us about them. Oh, man. I mean, and you know, my destination, blah, 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 behind the solid sandstone desk. Like, it's so funny. She's so worried about being late. And then she's like, I have lots of time. And then it's 2:15 when I arrive. Just freaking arrive already. Greatly relieved that I'm not late. Well, you said it was early. Why are you worried about being late now? It's just, there's just so much to it.
Yeah,
that's like,
which is it?
Come on. So Anastasia does finally get to Gray Enterprises. It's got Gray House written discreetly in steel over the glass front doors. So she finally gets there, and behind this sandstone desk is a attractive, groomed, blonde young woman who, you know, and I mean, I feel like you could even cut this. I mean, it does build some character a little bit for, like, Christian and sort of the kind of person and kind of company he is. But there's so much, like, I'm here to see this person. Excuse me, let me verify this.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You're going on in. Like...
Yeah, we don't need that. Especially, although, like, this is, I think, maybe one of the brilliant things about writing a book like this, because everybody is just on the hook. Like, everybody will go along with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, we're waiting for the spice.
Yeah.
So it almost, like, you don't even register.
Right.
You're like, okay, whatever, yeah.
Yep. Get to it. Come on, boo, come on.
Yeah, like, where's the sex?
Yep. I think it's funny. There was a thing here. She hands me a security pass that has visitor very firmly stamped on the front. I can't help my smirk. Surely it's obvious that I'm just visiting. Of course it is. Like, she's so worried about how she looks. And she talks about how the woman behind the desk is, like, very neat. It's like, this to me is like going to a restaurant and being like, I sit down and pick up my fork. It's very obvious I'm not a waiter. Like, of course you're not. You're not wearing the uniform that they wear. Like, what are you talking about?
Nobody thinks that. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, of course. Everybody knows that you're a visitor.
It's like going to a baseball game and sitting in the stands and smirking to yourself and being like, my thing says visitor. Clearly I'm not here to play baseball. No, of fucking course you're not. Like, come on. Oh, man. These are the things that it was like. There were sometimes that were, like, so bad I kind of had to laugh, and sometimes that it was just kind of boring. I was like, okay. We get our another instance of another sandstone desk and another young blonde woman.
So much sandstone.
Yeah, who makes her wait again, you know, and she's waiting. You're right. There is so much. Like, do you think it's on purpose? Do you think E.L. James does this to sort of build up the tension? Sort of clunkily written as it is, do you think she's trying to build up the tension before she meets Christian? Or do you think that she really is interested in giving Anastasia all of this physical detail to look at?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, I did, because I was so curious about when the actual sex was going to happen.
Yeah.
I did just, like flip through to see, like, when is this actually going to go down?
Yeah.
And thought, well, I think that is smart to, like, to make your readers wait, since they know what they're there for. So why not, like, draw out that tension a little bit?
Yeah.
But I couldn't find any reason for including that physical detail.
Yeah.
It just seems so unnecessary. I do not have a good answer for that.
I mean, I think that this is just sort of, I don't think it's on purpose. I think it's kind of clunkily written. I mean, she's trying to build up this tension about, like, Anastasia is wondering a lot about Christian Grey, and it's more like, it's funny to hear us talk about this, and because you know the premise of the book. I mean, most people know the premise of the book is that these two people start having a lot of sex, but, you know, she's not wondering about him or worrying about him because of anything like that. She really is just like, you know, she's not a reporter. She doesn't do interviews. So she's just feeling a little anxious about being in this big, you know, sort of imposing building. But there's so many things, little things that, you know, you don't need in here. My favorite thing was she doesn't know how old he is, and that drives her crazy. He could be 90 or he could be 30. The uncertainty is galling and my nerves resurface, making me fidget. Like, okay. And then later, this was one of my favorites. Judging from the building, which is too clinical and modern, I guess Gray is in his 40s, fit, tanned, and fair-haired to match the rest of the personnel. It's a building.
Yeah. Like, how did you get that?
I've never gone to the Met Opera and been like, judging from the building, I think the conductor is in her 100s. Like,
yeah.
What are you talking? How do you know? Did he build? If you don't know anything about him, why would you assume that he built the building and made it look like him? And then also, how long has it been there? Like, what if he's been in business for 15 years? Like, what? It's just so. That was just cut. Okay, so she's there. She's waiting to talk to Christian Grey. And another elegant, flawlessly dressed blonde comes out the door. She's very concerned about this. And so much more to cut. Mr. Grey will see you in a moment. May I take your jacket? Oh, please. Have you been offered any refreshment? No. Would you like tea, coffee, water, a glass of water? Okay. Olivia, please fetch Miss Steele a glass of water. Oh, my God. My apologies. Like, holy crap. And I think this is where I wrote for, like, the third or fourth time. Like, this is just so clunky, but like, this is, I guess, what I'm trying to sort of needle at is, what does Olivia, the intern, not getting her a glass of water contribute to the story? Does it contribute anything? Like, or is it just...
Oh, yeah. Not a thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it contributes anything, right?
Perhaps Mr. Grey insists on all his employees being blonde. Okay. That reminded me of was that old episode of Seinfeld where Elaine is really mad because at the diner, all the women that work there are very busty. And she's like, all this owner is such a perv. He keeps hiring busty women. Like, what the hell? And at the end of the episode, she's like, don't all these women sort of seem alike to you? And he goes, yeah, they're all my daughters. And she's like, oh, so, what if they're all sisters? So, all right. So finally, we're building up to it. We see a man. And finally.
There's Christian.
So she goes in. And as she goes in, she trips over her own feet, which to me is like the oldest trope in the book for a character with low self-esteem and stuff. Just make them trip.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, like, it's also porny.
Yeah.
Like, it works for that. I mean, like, this is why, like, I started playing all these mind games with myself, Andy, because I'd read this line and I'd be like, oh, man. And then I'd think, well, wait. Maybe this is exactly right. maybe this is why we read books like this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she very much is like, I guess that's...
Andy, no, you're like, no.
Well, no, you're right in that, like, it's like a little bit more of the, like, oh, I've fallen and, my guard is down. Like, that's what she's doing is literally giving Anastasia a reason to feel vulnerable in this first moment of meeting Christian.
Yeah.
That seems like so much over analysis for something like this, but there is a reason to why she does it. So, okay, so she double crap me and my two left feet, exclaims Anna in her head, and some gentle hands are around her helping her stand. So she, I have to steel myself to glance up. Holy cow, he's so young, she says. So there you go. She like is instantly very much attracted and into this guy. He's so young and attractive, very attractive. He's tall, dressed in a fine gray suit, white shirt, black tie, with unruly dark copper-colored hair and intense bright gray eyes that regard me shrewdly. It's like a line from a weird old song. Regard me shrewdly. Like, actually, so yeah, she's. There was a moment in here where I could hear Martin Amis's voice in my head. This is sort of small, sort of rolling British, and just avoid cliches, whatever. So she says, if this guy's over 30, then I'm a monkey's uncle. Is like 100% the kind of stuff that you should not put in your writing. Of like, that is just such a cliched phrase. Ignore that, but it's just so funny. She feels an odd shiver run down her spine as they touch hands. And finally, they start the interview. Finally. Were you intrigued at this point in time? Were you ready for this? Were you like, yes, finally, I want to hear these two talk?
Yeah, I really wanted to hear what they had to say. And then the interview started, and the interview horrified me so much.
Why? Why specifically?
the interview just, like, every question was the worst question.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real highlight being when she asks him if he's gay.
Yeah. Oh, boy. We'll get to that.
I was, like, trying to, like, think, okay, when was this? This is, like, was it written in 2010? I can't remember when it
2011.
Came out. 2011?
Yeah.
Were we still, like, could something like that have happened? Like, would we have asked a question like that in an
right.
interview? Would somebody have asked a question like that in an interview? That's so yep. crazy.
Yep. There's so much, and again, there's like so much that you could cut in these things here. You know, would you like to sit? He waves me towards an out. Like, you could put in dialogue. He gestures for me to sit. Like there's just so much that this dialogue doesn't do any work for. They look at a painting, and it's a local artist. Like, okay, the first instance of the word cox is in here, but not in the fun way. It's just he cocks his head to one side and regards me intently. It's like not even like, you know, they're like looking at a painting. She says, raising the ordinary to extraordinary. I couldn't agree more, Miss Steele, he replies, his voice soft. Like, that's not even, they're looking at art. Like, she calls him an Adonis who sinks gracefully into a white leather chair. So, okay, so she's getting ready to do these things. And here was a funny plot point to me, is that she has a list of questions from her friend, right? From Kate. So, you know, she's, here it is. I'm not used to this. Take all the time you need. Do you mind if I record your answers? After you've taken so much trouble to set up the recorder, you ask me now? Is he teasing me? Is he teasing you? That's not very good teasing. Okay. So, you know, he's going to be conferring degrees at this year's graduation ceremony. Oh, she's very excited about that. I have some questions for you, Mr. Gray, she says. Okay. I thought you might, he says, deadpan. Ha ha ha, very funny. The first question. You're very young to have amassed such an empire. You didn't look at the questions at all, Anastasia Steele. You were worried this guy would be 90? The first question is you're very young. Like, what the come on.
Yeah, she's as unprepared as she could possibly be.
But she's like so mad that her friend didn't give her a biography or anything. It's like, couldn't you look through them like real quick, please?
Yeah, or like do your own research.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you know that you're gonna go and talk to this dude.
The internet was around in 2011. You could go on it and look him up. I'm sure there's an article about him on your college's website. So
that's verifiable, Andy. I think you're right. We did in fact have the internet.
He goes through this whole thing about achieving success and about how he feels like he can follow his gut and he knows people. And again, I just feel like we could cut so much of this. She says to him, you sound like a control freak. The words are out of my mouth before I can stop them. Like, I don't know. I guess at this point in time, I don't know enough about Anastasia. She doesn't strike me as the kind of person who just says what's on her mind. And in some ways, I think that would have been a little bit more fun if she did, but she's so self-deprecating and so, like, I had trouble believing her sometimes when she sort of gave it back to him a little bit. Like, you know, he's talking about how he can find all these
yeah.
things and be a good businessman. She says, maybe you're just lucky. You sound like a control freak. Like, or if she had made the decision to sort of tease him back because she's so attracted, but it just doesn't feel like that. It just feels like somebody's shoehorning in some dialogue there.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think you're right. It doesn't really check out. It would make more sense if her inner monologue was registering surprise at the fact that she's engaging with him in that way, if she's sparring with him.
Yeah.
But and it doesn't.
No, and she barely knows anything about him. He says something like, if I were to decide I was no longer interested in the telecommunications business, and sell, you know, and he says, if I sell everything, then 20,000 people would struggle to make their mortgage payments after a month or so. First of all, why does he employ 20,000 people?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I read it.
Yeah, I guess. Cool. And she says, don't you have a board to answer to? I asked, disgusted. I was like, for somebody who's like, why do you care so much?
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, we think that she didn't care.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she really does. like, all of a sudden cares enough that she's willing to engage with him in a way that seems like it would make her really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then the questions that she asks and the questions that Catherine has written down for her to ask are,
yep,
they're all crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I was expecting for Catherine's questions to be, to make more sense.
Yeah.
But they were kind of silly questions.
Yeah. Well, for everything that's going on here, there's an interesting setup here for two characters meeting. You have a list of questions that you should be asking him for a school newspaper, right? And presumably those are probably fairly cut and dry. You know, how did you get started in business? You know, what would you say your business's greatest thing is? You know, blah, blah, blah. But then there's this like little game that you could start to play where, like, you know, you can tell this isn't a question that's on the list, but she has this little bit of, I don't want to say power in this situation, but she has a little bit of freedom to, you know, maybe disguise it as a question that's on the list kind of thing. You know, like, there is an interesting setup here for these two people to meet and this game to play. And it's just, every time she has like a question that she's like, it's not on the list, it's not even fun or flirty. Like, it just feels, yeah, weird. But I think then it's because the questions that are on Kate's list are so strange anyway. Like,
yeah, they're bizarre. I have a note next to the, like, when Christian is talking about why he's so good at business.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I make decisions based on logic and facts.
Yep.
Something about that line felt, it was so funny to me because it, well, my note says, LOL, logic and facts, this is how I'd write about business.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe why it's funny to me, is it reads like if you were writing something and you wanted to write about a character who was a very smart businessman or,
yep,
like a surgeon or,
yep,
something that requires a lot of skill,
yeah,
without actually having that skill yourself.
Yep.
And this reads like that.
Yeah.
To,
yeah,
me.
I mean, it's sort of the equivalent to me of, like, you know, if you had a TV show about doctors, instead of, you know, having them be like, listen, this patient has this specific thing, we usually, you know, do this, this, and this for them. Why didn't you do that this time? Having them be like, I usually read the charts and we give them medicine, and you didn't give them medicine, you gave them not medicine.
Yeah.
It's like, it, you know, it's like, feels like a placeholder, right? Like, instead of him being,
yeah,
like,
absolutely. Yeah, it's, yeah, scaffolding. But then on the other hand,
scaffolding,
this is where, like, it kept coming in. I kept thinking,
yep,
well, but maybe we just don't care.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, the point is fantasy. And,
yep,
so, like, we're putting on a costume. And, like, you know, when you see little kids walking around on Halloween and they're wearing, like, you know, their, like, Frozen costume,
yep,
or their Spider-Man costume, and it's, like, a shitty costume.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not, like, it's like, made of plastic. It's going to fall apart the next day. But it does the job. Like, it allows that person to inhabit that role in a fantastical way for a short period of time.
Yeah.
And I think that in a way, like, these lines are doing that for us. Like,
yeah,
they're not supposed to hold up in,
yeah,
in the court of literary public opinion. Like, they're just supposed to, they're supposed to get us to that big O.
Yep. That big O. I mean, there's just so many questions here. She asks him, you invest in farming technologies. Why are you interested? Well, we can't eat money. That sounds very philanthropic. He invests in them. He still makes money. Like, she's like, is that something you feel passionately about? Feeding the world's poor? Just because you invest in farming technologies doesn't mean you're a philanthropist. Like, again, You want to possess things. Like, he's a business. He runs a business. Of course he wants to possess things. Like,
absolutely he does.
You want money? Here's another fun question. You were adopted. How much do you think that shaped the way you are? Like, oh, really? Oh, this is personal. Like, of course I'm adopted. Look it up in the library.
Yeah, I also love the question. But if you work so hard, what do you do to chill out?
Yeah. Oh, you'll see. Oh boy. And then of course, all leading up to, are you gay, Mr. Gray? He inhales sharply and I cringe, mortified. Gosh. Crap. Why didn't I employ some kind of filter before I read this straight out? How can I tell him I'm just reading the questions? Damn Kate and her curiosity. What kind of a question is that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, like, yeah, I have next to, are you gay, Mr. Gray, my note is, what? And then my note next to the damn Kate and her curiosity is, wait, this is Kate's question?
Yeah. It almost ruins, like, I don't love that question, but if Anastasia was the one to ask it, either out of her own personal curiosity or because, you know, she's like, nobody like, no, you know, it just says so much more about her if it's her question and she disguises it as something for the interview rather than vice versa, rather than accidentally being like, are you gay? And it almost feels like she accidentally asks it. So, you know, like, oh, okay, they can hook up. Good. Like,
yeah, I think they are truly bizarre questions.
And then he's surprised that they aren't her own questions. She's like, I'm sorry, it's written here. These aren't your own questions. Didn't he know that this was the, like, okay, aren't you colleagues on the student paper? He asked, like, yeah, so what? I still wasn't the one that was going to give the interview. Like, come on. So, I don't know. I honestly, that would have been a good place to kind of end this here, actually. It would have been more interesting to me if it was like, you know, they kind of were, he was at least answering her questions and then she asked him something that's like too personal. If he was like, okay, we're done here and she could redeem it. But they just keep going on and on and on. I was like, okay, come on. Either have sex or shut up. That's where I was at this point.
This is not related to any of those things, but I just want to celebrate the fact that there is a character named Andrea.
Oh, yep.
In this book.
Yep.
There aren't a lot of Andreas running around, so just, I felt pretty great about that.
Yep.
And, as you were.
Yes. Well, there's not much more to their conversation. He says that they have an excellent internship program and sort of asks her what she's doing after college. You know, she says, I'm not sure I'd fit in here. He says, why do you say that? And she says, it's obvious, isn't it? And inside, in her inner monologue, she says, I'm uncoordinated, scruffy, and I'm not blonde. Not to me, he says. Like, okay. She has so much inner monologue stuff, too. Like, there's so much of this first 50 pages that's told in her head. And I don't feel like any of it really adds much. I tear my eyes away from his scrutiny and stare blindly at my knotted fingers. She's in her head. What's going on? Like, you're showing us that she's feeling that way by tearing herself away and staring at her fingers, which are knotting. You don't need to add that in. This is where he kind of starts to flirt with her. Would you like me to show you around? You're driving back to Vancouver. You know, they break this, but he walks her to the door. You know, he walks her to the elevator. Don't you have a coat? Like, but it's like, so come on. All right. Come on. Come on. And then there's literally a part where they're waiting for the elevator. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not intriguing at all. They're just waiting. But the chapter ends really well. He really is very good looking. It's unnerving. Anastasia, he says as a farewell. Christian, I reply. And mercifully, the doors close. Oh. Okay. So, I mean, this for me was 50 pages. And Miss Andrea, who is intrigued to read more of this book. Are you sure you want to read more of this book?
No. No, but also I was like, yeah, this is, like, I'm 50-50 on this.
Yeah.
Like, I can see why you would, keep reading.
Yeah.
Just because of curiosity.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I was curious to figure out, like, when the sex started happening. So I like, I flipped through just to like get to that point.
Yeah.
So I think it, I think probably the question is, when am I reading this? If it's now, you know, maybe. It's getting kind of lonely in here. Like, not a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's nobody watching me.
Yeah, nobody can judge you.
I don't have to answer to anybody. Like, I mean, not you. I mean, like, I'm definitely not going to tell you if I'm in this book. Yeah, like, I don't know.
So much of this book seems to be built on, like, waiting for something. I mean, I can see how this spread word of mouth very much because, I mean, even you and I are sort of reading this based on a reputation, right? That's like,
yeah.
I'm going to keep reading it because no matter how clunky it is, I want to know when it gets to something that I've never read before in a book. And which is to say that, you know, I've read plenty of books where there's a sex scene or something, but this book sort of promises something different. And I feel like that's the thing that, that keeps people reading, right? I mean, it's clunky, but it's simple. It's not like horrendous. I'm honestly, the worst part of it for me was that I was a little bored. Their first conversation, I at least expected something a little flirty and steamy, and it was just kind of boring. And that where I was like, come on, let's like, I can forgive the first scene where she's, you know, with her roommate and it's like, okay, cut this. I can forgive the driving, but it's like so much boredom keeps amounting to me that, yeah, you know, you'd want to like skip ahead and read the sex scene just to get out of them talking about feeding the world's poor or something. Like, it's just, there's no personal connection between the two of them. So you're 50-50, you would delve in. You would pandemic delve in, but perhaps other times of the year or life, maybe
other
not.
Other times of the year, like, yeah, I probably would not.
But, got it.
But I've got enough time on my hands and enough anonymity in the privacy of my apartment to, I don't know, maybe go down that road.
Yeah. I was just kind of bored and, you know, maybe the sex scenes were at least less boring, but I don't know if I could weed through all of the other stuff that's in here to get to, you know, those things. And even then it's like, you know, how worth it are they, you know, and have you read, like, are they worth it? Is it worth it to at least read the sex scenes?
I mean, I guess like I felt like reading this, like it almost perfectly performed what low-grade porn does.
Yeah.
Like, and porn is, like, it's got a job to do.
Right.
And so it's, like, a little seamy and a little seedy, and, like, the quality's not great, but it's getting the job done. Like, and so I think in that sense, it's successful.
Yeah.
Because like it's doing exactly what it says it's going to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't break that contract with the reader.
Right. Right.
Which says like, I'm going to give you some sex.
Right.
you just have to like wade with me through all this other, but well, like these boring interviews, for example, or these clunky sentences. But every book I can't believe I'm arguing for this, but every book is asking the reader to do something in exchange for something else.
Right. Yeah. And
some of those other books are like, they've got loftier aims.
Right.
but, you know, like we're all paying in some way.
Yep. I mean, the you're right. This book in a way, it's like, it's not offensively bad, and I don't mean that as like literal, like taking offense to the content of the book, but as like like offensively bad of like, wow, this is just so poorly written. It's just fairly mediocre, and you know, like there are so many books out there that are fairly mediocre, and you know, if you like them, you like them. It's just so funny that this particular book got so popular because it does not seem to me to do anything particularly well that, you know, in contrast to some of the other things on the podcast, at least every other thing that I've read that has been a, you know, our bestseller that month at the store, I can see something that like that book was doing particularly well. That I was like, yeah, that's why people like this. To me, just seemed almost like the content of it or the fact that it's in there was the driving factor, and that word of mouth really goes through. But it's just strange. And again, it really is kind of the way I feel about sci-fi things or like things like that, where it's like, yeah, that was a good book, but it doesn't do it any better than, you know, this book does or this book does, kind of thing. Like, how did that thing get so popular when it doesn't really do it any better than, you know, so-and-so did or so-and-so did? So that's just what's really funny to me. And I guess I still can't figure it out. Maybe it's just a time and a place thing. Maybe the sex in here is like a little bit more dirty than would normally be expected in a book. Maybe it's just so poorly written at the start and the sex is just such a payoff that there's something appealing to it. But I can't imagine there being three books of this. Like, I don't know. After the first couple sex scenes, it's like, I mean, at some point in time, she gets what she wants. And you know, I'm sure there's more plot to it and something, but it's like, okay, they had sex. Can we stop the book now? Or like what? Like, I mean, yeah. Even a porn ends after a little bit. You know? Like, come on.
I mean, I don't know enough about it to know, because I know that there were, like, I mean, there were so many people who were mad about this book for so many reasons.
Yeah.
Like, there were, like, really conservative people who were mad about,
yeah,
the mainstream nature of them, like mainstreaming porn.
Yeah.
And then, like, the BDSM people were mad about the way they represented BDSM, I think. I think they didn't like.
Yeah.
The portrayals.
Yep.
And then like, you know, literary people like were mad about the prose.
Yep.
So I don't know enough about romance novels to know,
yeah,
if this was unusual, if the material that we're being given,
right,
where, like, as it relates to BDSM is like different. I mean, I know that, like, in, like, regular romance novels, it kind of tends to be, like, it's the setting and the costumes that change, but
right,
what's happening is generally staying the same.
Right, right, right.
So,
yeah.
So is it that? Is it the fact that, like, there's some harder core stuff happening?
Yeah.
That,
yeah,
is intriguing for people?
There's something, I think, to be said, too, though, of, you know, like you brought up, that some of the portrayals of you know, the BDSM and the way that they have sex faced some criticism from that community of, like, this isn't really the way that you should interact with your partner. And, you know, I was reading a lot of people that read this and were like, this isn't what it actually is. This is just like abuse in some way, shape, or form. So it's kind of funny that it faced a lot of criticism from all places. But again, it's funny to me because, you know, how many sort of like novels are that, and because they don't get popular, nobody really looks at it and gives it some,
yeah,
criticism, and then, you know, the other way. But it is funny to me that there are some of the same, because it's, you know, started out as Twilight fan fiction, there are some of the same like criticisms of that there were of Twilight, kind of thing. And really it does make,
yeah,
me remember a time when Twilight and when this was like big and everybody was kind of freaking out about it. Was kind of funny. These things pop up every now and then. There's just some new thing for everybody to get upset about, and for me, I would definitely not delve in. I would shelve this, but it's because it's just exceedingly meh to me. So not even in a bored pandemic can I say, hey, I'll at least see what it's about, which is the way I feel like Risa felt, you know, and the way a lot of people felt, word of mouth. Like, even if you weren't like, I am so into this, was like, well, you know, let me at least see where this goes. Like, I've already put 10 minutes of my time into reading this, you know, first few pages. Like, let's at,
yeah,
least see, let's at least get to the good stuff here. So, but all right. So are you going to delve in? Are you going to finish this bad boy up? Are you going to watch the movie?
No, I'm not going. Ultimately, I am not going to delve.
Yeah.
I am going to shelve.
Yeah. I like, honestly, I cannot think of what she must lose him or something in the other two books or blah, blah, blah. But holy crap. And, you know, she wrote something recently that I think goes into his backstory. Like, I think it was called Christian or just Gray or something,
yeah,
like that. And it's funny because that was one of those books that we got like paper to sign at the store that was like, we're not going to put it out before the on sale date. We're not going to open it from the box. We're not going to look at it. You're not going to breathe on it. Just when it comes to the store, put it in a corner and don't even think about it again until it's time for it to go out. And I think that's because there's like movie rights involved and everything. And it's like such a big deal. We must have sold one copy of it. It's like, it was like nothing. I think we ordered two. It was like nothing. It's just a blip for us. So, and it's funny too how, you know, we've sort of gone past the crest of that. So there you go. Well, that's a shell for me and a shell for Andrea. Even bored out of our minds with nothing else to do, we're not gonna jump in on this. I wonder how this book will be remembered in another 10 years, if anybody will even really remember 50 Shades of Grey. But a small thank you to 50 Shades of Grey for saving some independent bookstores across the nation. Anything we missed that you wanted to mention? Anything like that?
Well, I don't know. Like, I've been reading that book by Maggie Nelson, The Argonauts.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which is great. And she, like, there's this really great quote about she feels like she's learning and relearning the same lessons.
Yeah.
And I thought about that when I was reading this, Sex Sells.
Yep.
I think that we are like always learning and relearning that in different contexts.
Yep.
There will always be a new way for us to discover just how attractive sex is.
Yep.
To people.
Yeah. And this one is sort of unabashedly, she's not trying to make it great. She's not trying to write the next great literary novel. She's just writing. She did it. She did what she wanted to write about, and there you go. So, oh boy. All right. Well, that's a goodbye from me and a goodbye from Andrea and from Anastasia and Christian and the Sandstone Desks of the world. Thank you so much, Andrea, for diving into these first 50 pages, and I hope that at least skipping to page 160 was a little bit of fun for you.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Oh boy. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Good night. Goodbye. And God, if you want to read this book, I guess go for it, but don't feel like you ever have to.
If you want all the news on upcoming Furthermore episodes, you should follow us on Instagram. That's at Furthermore Podcast, all one word. Not separate, but together. Furthermore Podcast. Furthermore was created by Andy Dorado. It is edited, written, produced, and all the music you hear is by Andy Dorado. Thank you to Andrea for coming on this episode of Furthermore. It was a blast. We had a lot of fun. We've got another episode that we did together coming out for you. But thank you to Andrea for reading 50 Shades of Grey. I think she liked reading it more than I did. So all the artwork for Furthermore is done by Max Farinato. You can find him on Instagram at CBArtist_. Max runs Twitch streams. He does all kinds of great stuff and his artwork is fantastic. If you ever need anything from him, MaxFarinato.com, Max Farinato. Thank you so much for listening to Furthermore. I've got a lot more upcoming episodes coming your way. Hope everyone is staying safe, is staying healthy. Make sure to follow us on Instagram. Make sure to send me any book recommendations that you think I should take a look at in these quarantine times. I got lots of ideas percolating, getting ready to do lots more recording and lots more editing. This episode sort of exists in a gray area, and to be honest with you, I haven't been reading a ton lately, so I don't have a specific book of a month that I've read lately, but I will tell you this. I'm trying to reread Fool by Christopher Moore in anticipation of his new book, Shakespeare for Squirrels. Christopher Moore is one of my favorite authors. If you ever need something funny, go to him first. Always really light, always really humorous, but with a lot of heart. Fool is actually a retelling of King Lear from the Fool point of view. Christopher Moore put in a lot of great details, a lot of really fun research and stuff. I mean, it's basically a giant Monty Python sketch, and he'll admit to it then. There was a sequel to that called The Serpent of Venice, which combined The Merchant of Venice and Othello, and Shakespeare for Squirrels is coming out, actually, as I'm recording this, the following Tuesday of this month. I'm eagerly awaiting my copy to come. So I'm taking this opportunity to plug Christopher Moore, because, hey, I love Christopher Moore so much. Rereading Fool has been a joy, and by rereading, I mean falling asleep while reading before bed as we put our new baby to sleep. But hey, I'll take whatever time I can get to read. This is Andy Dorado, and hey, keep reading. If we were an accident, I'll swear you to the stars.
A regression's just a point on a line we call a scar. I made a vow to carry the